Beverly Guitar Watkins, swinging from star to star. By the way, she was only 70 when she made this.
Her first album was when she was 60.
Beverly Guitar Watson, late of Ray Charles Band, James Brown's band, Piano Red, Swirling in the Heavens. We're going to get to Beverly Guitar Watkins. This is a very big day here. Hello, hooray, hurrah. Once again, the smartest man in the world, Proof House, takes to the ether. This time from the salubrious confines of the Porpoise of Fruititude, located somewhere in Lower California. Me llamo Gregorio, a sus órdenes. Mi esposa es Jennifer.
Hello.
Hi. If you like Fruit Mine as much as I do.
Really?
This was the day that Orange 45 had a press conference with the Prime Minister of Italy, the new one.
How'd that go?
Really well. Apparently, America's relationship with Italy goes back thousands of years to the ancient times. And as you
know... how interesting.
I'm a student of Roman history, and I can verify this. I was looking at before the First Republic, when Sulla and Marius was... The First Republic was over, and Julius Caesar took over as the first dictator. An American envoy was there at that court and brought them Pop Rocks.
Rhode Island.
Yeah.
And, weighed in.
Yeah. The guy from Rhode Island, his name was Gerald, and he brought malted milk balls and Oreo double-stuffed cookies. The Roman Feast of Saturnalia, which took place at Christmas time.
It was nice of someone from Brooklyn to bring bagels.
It was, you know what? The Romans would have never gotten through the Second Punic War with Carthage if they hadn't had the bagels that Scipio Goldburgus provided. Yeah. And he had come over from South Carolina, is my understanding, one of the first colonies, as you know, that Harriet Tubman founded with W.E.B. Du Bois and Jackie Robinson. And Martin Luther King, who a lot of people are talking about now, living in a...
This is like Bill and Ted's version of history.
Well, this is the dollar store dictatorship. I mean, we're talking about no knowledge aforehand, no malice that isn't aforethought, and absolute, complete, and utter disregard for any historical facts or geography that existed now or forever. Saying that America's thousands of years old looks... a great deal of history right in the face and says, hey, you know what? It would be great if America existed when ancient Rome existed. Kind of like how Jesus rode a dinosaur to buy an AK-47 or an AR-15 to shoot people with.
Mm-hmm.
I think that his constituency is perfectly served by...
are some special spirochetes.
You know, they're the size of water wiggles. I'm just losing everybody with water wiggles here, as if I haven't lost you already. A water wiggle was a toy that in the 60s and 70s, you tied to a hose and it had a weird kind of spermatozoa ghost head. And it would jump in the air as the pressure of the water went and spray water all over everybody. And that was called a water wiggle. And it was quite large. It was because it went on the back of a garden hose. You screwed it to a garden hose, if you'll pardon the expression.
Very, very high tech.
Mm. There was a slip and slide, which was a piece of rubber, like a giant mat of rubber that was yards long. Did you have one?
Yes, of course.
And you put a hose in one end of it, and you turn the hose on full blast, and it filled this thing with water. And all the kids in the neighborhood would come to whoever had the water wiggle at their house and slide down in their swimsuits. The trick was that most people's lawns weren't cleared of every rock or bottle or pop top. In those days, pop tops were a thing. So you would slide down the fucker, and a piece of tan bark would catch your groin or your back of your leg about halfway down.
Well, it was just a good, cheap, and fun way to destroy your clothes, possibly injure someone.
And ruin the lawn. The lawn was soaked through with water after you used a slip and slide or a water wiggle. Because the amount of water you were wasting... But it was for summer afternoons. Kids would go crazy on them. And anything to get wet, obviously, and anything to... So the water, the spirochetes that are frolicking to and fro like seahorses inside 45's brain, like in a terrible aquarium, like sea monkeys, if your memory goes back that far, are the size of gigantic grapefruits. They're no longer tiny little... I believe Speaker Pelosi said it today best when she said... we need to pray for his health. He's having a serious meltdown today.
Yeah.
That was her takeaway from the meeting. And then he tweeted, Nancy's having a meltdown. Like, okay.
He posted a photo of her standing up to him as though that was a bad thing.
That's the best part.
Everyone is enjoying that photo because she is the boss.
And he posted it like
she was the adult in the room.
Right. And he called her Nervous Nancy in the tweet
and
where he ran
has
the picture.
Never appeared to be nervous.
Everyone on his side's looking at the floor or looking at the table, except him, who's looking on in grimacing disbelief. She's standing like the giantest person in the world, ruling the universe, laying down law to him, because he is having a complete meltdown over Syria today. The House voted him down big time over Syria. He's not able to explain how he's not controlling the situation at all. It's been disclosed that he wrote a letter where he said, "You'll be the devil," to the Prime Minister of Turkey.
Yeah.
Pronounce his name for me.
Erdogan.
The Prime Minister Erdogan of Turkey, that horrible dictator, he wrote a letter to him and said, "You'll be the devil if you don't do this. Don't be a fool!" Exclamation point, and then I'll call you. That letter was from October 9th. The next day, they invaded Syria. So he's having a meltdown on about 50 different levels here.
Turns out Hillary, in 2016, when she said that he's going to let the Kurds down, mm-hmm. and that he's a Putin's puppet, turns out that
no
was
puppet.
Right.
Yeah. No puppet.
Oh, Lord.
I know. The screaming and the yelling. However, Speaker Pelosi, so bitchin' McChicken. One, as Jennifer pointed out, she has a million single-collar outfits that are her suits. She doesn't wear stripes or no. checks or dings or anything like that. It's always business, business, business. The highest heels in the world. Fuck-off haircut. And today, she was in the White House at a meeting where all the Democratic leaders were on one side of the table. All of the Nazi leaders were on the other side of the table from the Wehrmacht.
Most of which looked ashamed.
Sheepish. He's the king of projection. He calls Adam Schiff Shifty Schiff, and Adam Schiff is probably one of the most forthright members of Congress. He literally is one of the most honest members. He calls Nancy Nervous Nancy because he had to come up with nicknames for them for the impeachment. He hadn't any nicknames for them before because he was afraid of them. Like, he doesn't call Kamala Crazy Kamala or anything like that.
No.
He hasn't got to her because he's terrified of her.
Yeah.
But calling her Nervous Nancy, she's the least nervous person in the world. I've never seen anyone. As you said, this is her wheelhouse. She's been in intelligence for 30 years.
She was on the Intelligence Committee for a long time.
Mm.
So, yeah, she knows what's going on. I loved what Kamala said the other day about taking away his Twitter.
By the time this goes out, it'll have been several days ago, and she reiterated something that had been put forward, which was that he should be off Twitter because he's violating all the rules and he's inciting violence. She said it again last night. Chris Hayes, who you may know, he is a human that works on MSNBC, and he asked her the question, does it matter? And she went, yes, it matters. And then he went, do you understand, or rather, he incites violence.
No, he said, Does he know if it's inciting violence? And Kamala responded, Senator Harris responded, does it matter?
No.
Because the result is the same. He is getting people to threaten. I read today that Maxine Waters can't go to the grocery store mm-hmm. without a security detail.
And Ilhan Omar's had to put on.
It's very serious.
Yeah. The shooter in, the moron who shot up El Paso stated categorically that the president's Twitter feed
was inspired by him.
The Coast Guard guy, the crazy dude who went to jail, the bodybuilder dude who sent the threatening letters to everyone, including Nancy Pelosi. He was inspired by the tweets. It's his 8chan. Mm-hmm. It's his intel. Mm-hmm. It's his InfoWars.
Since he's been in office, there's been nothing but an explosion of white extremist terrorist groups in America. And if you want to never sleep again, just look at the Southern Poverty Law Center's hate watch map, because they show you each group
mm-hmm.
across America, and it's very scary.
Well, and this Justice Department's not exactly bending over backwards to make that better.
Yeah.
But the thought about Nancy Pelosi was the White House tweeted that she was Nervous Nancy and that she looked bad and that she was having a meltdown and all those things. And they posted the picture of her, and she took the picture and put it on her Twitter feed as her avatar. So it's
immediately. It's not her avatar. It's her banner.
Her banner.
And
sorry.
It's just great that she immediately did that, because she gets what's going on and she's in control, and thank God she's there.
Oh, yeah.
Because on their team, they've got apparently every day of the week there's going to be some nefarious person arrested at an airport lounge at either JFK or Dulles.
Well, you know,
he's got a one-way ticket to Vienna.
Exactly. The revolution was one of the times when our airports were under attack the hardest, as you recall from the 4th of July speech.
Yeah. After, were there any Romans, ancient Romans?
Well,
there?
I was going to say, after the ancient Roman, and he, but the best part of him talking about ancient Rome today was he said that Italy gave us, and he was reading off a card, and it was as foreign to him as if you'd asked him.
My understanding was that Nero really liked, there was an Italian in West Village.
Oh my God, he went to it all the time. He had an open table there of Nero and his claque. Caligula used to go there with his horse, the one he loved so much. And Heliogabalus, my understanding is, used to, you know, sometimes stay at the Dakota or whatever when he was in New York, maybe the, you know, the Plaza.
Hadrian was more into London.
Hadrian, as you know, was a bisexual, well, let's say it. I don't know that bi. Quite frankly, he named a whole town after his boyfriend when his boyfriend died. Hadrian is a wild emperor. He traveled the world. Unlike 45, he actually kind of knew where he was, I think. When he was in Syria, he knew he was in Syria.
Yeah.
He knew where Turkey was. Bithynia, I think it was. The Bithynians have been a vital part of American history for thousands of years, since the cave paintings that were drawn by Martin Luther Cave and Eddie Furlong and Mr. Facebook and all of the ones who, Mr. Frigidaire.
Mr. Apple.
Tim Apple is such an important part of my impeachment is a Chinese hoax. And the courage of no angels, let me tell you that. The Parthians and the Bithynians and the Scythians had better watch their ass, because I'm coming to the Black Sea. I wrote you a letter last week. I'll call you. Let me get back to you here. Rudy's at the airport with a couple of Russian guys he met.
Vlad the Impaler was more coherent.
No one's been less coherent. This, it is cake-taking, and it's, I think you really do have to go back to the 19th century.
Well, and also, his personal lawyer is self-incriminating each and every day. Mm. Today he said that he has gotten rid of his lawyer and he's representing himself.
Right. And
this criminal case.
Why would I need a lawyer? Rudy Giuliani said, because I am a lawyer.
Oh my God.
No, the crazy doesn't even stop. It's expounding and it's expounding exponentially. However, there's so many heroes on the top of this that I that's the part that gives me hope to carry on every day.
And a lot of them are in California, or from California.
Well, you got your Nancy Pelosi, you got your Adam Schiff, you got your Ted Lieu, Eric Swalwell. Oh, Maxine Waters. Hmm. Barbara Lee, Kamala Harris, asking sort of the hard questions, directing the argument where it kind of needs to go, his mental instability, his abuse of social media to incite and foment violence, his complete lack of probity or circumspection in any type of matter foreign. Now we know for a fact, because Mattis, who I always thought was insane, and John Bolton. When John Bolton is coming down on the side of this is too far, then you know that it's too far. Because
with
John Bolton's a maniac.
Mustache.
Yes. He's been a terrible public servant for his entire career. He was a ghastly ambassador to the United Nations. He's xenophobic and racist. He was a ghastly pundit in his off years and going around the country to think tanks. Then when he was asked to join this cabinet, I was absolutely mortified that he was in the cabinet. And now you realize 2 weeks ago or a month ago before he got fired that he was saying, this is crazy. But what was it? Rudy's a hand grenade and he's going to blow us all up.
Yeah. Yes.
But they don't listen to any of that because it's dime store, just dictator,
apparently,
dollar store.
Apparently the money of the moment outweighs the end of the world. These people have no, there is no tomorrow for this little cretinous crew. And they have no, there's no inner thought. There is no reflection. There is no capability of that. They're just immoral.
And it's not going to stop. Yeah. No one's going to put the brakes on it. They may have a vote in the Senate. I mean, you know. I think that a lot of senators on the dark side are scared to go back and say they don't want to hold an impeachment vote because it seems so obvious that it needs to happen. So I think that he might bring it to the floor. I don't like to predict because I don't think anything good comes from any of the high-ranking Republicans. I just don't think they break ranks at all. I think the lower ones, you might see some defections and they get scared because they've got to face election and they've tied their entire world to the maniac who's gibbering about ancient America, talking to ancient Romans and talking about how he's going to punish the Turks for this incursion into Syria that he allowed to happen that has destroyed,
how many years of foreign policy? Speaking of ancient America, it was...
Which, by the way, I was born in.
Indigenous Peoples Day.
Yay!
Monday. And it used to be known as Columbus Day.
It'll always be known to me. And I wanted everyone to know I'm racist.
And I was reading about Mount Rushmore, which was one of the sacred mountains for the Lakota Sioux. They called it part of the Six Grandfathers.
Oh, really?
And they were given it in a treaty. And then the colonizers decided in their great and kind...
Maybe when they struck gold, was it in the Black Hills?
Yeah. That they were going to carve the faces of some white guys.
And was not Gustav Borglum and his son noted, shall we say, racists?
Well, you know, take your pick, really, amongst the in the crowd. But
they did put two slave owners on the Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, it's really revolting. And I was saying to you on the phone the other day that we know that Uluru is a sacred site in Australia, and people were, when we went there the first time, people were marching up and down.
Yeah, like they
that
still
was,
were.
That was an okay thing to do, which it absolutely isn't. It's sacred. And but I said to you that no one, an Australian, didn't carve the faces of In Excess into the side of Uluru, but somehow we thought that was
soup. It was okay to put Teddy Roosevelt.
It was soup's okay to do that to a sacred site to the Lakota Sioux. It's just,
You've been there. I've been to North Dakota, but I've never been there. Now, you've seen it, right?
I mean, South Dakota.
Is that where it is?
Yes.
Where is it?
South Dakota.
Where? Oh, it's in the Black Hills of South Dakota.
Yes.
Is it near any? There's no cities. It's not near anything.
Yeah, it's called the Six Grandfathers, and it is absolutely a sacred site. And
not anymore. With four white slave owner people?
Well, that's one of the Six Grandfathers. But it's good to know that. We need to know our history. If you need one book that's fascinating is Dee Brown's Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee.
Oh, Dee Brown wrote dozens of books that are awesome. Yeah. Bury My Heart is amazing. Dee Brown
came
also
out in 1970.
Oh, right? Yeah. Well, it's the first great account of
right at the beginning of the American Indian Movement. In the 70s American Indian Movement, when they took over Alcatraz.
Absolutely. For years in the 70s. Also, there was a separate Wounded Knee that happened again, of course.
Yes.
There was the first famous massacre.
Well, and also it wasn't, exactly. It wasn't a battle. It was a massacre.
No, the battle is overcharacterizing it. Women and children were killed. That's by the federal forces both times. And that's what really went down. But I think you'll find almost all engagements with the Indians, other than maybe Little Bighorn, which was a skirmish for the Sioux Nation. They had about 30,000 people there. Or, you know, battle warriors. And people act like it was this giant pitch battle that lasted all day. Custer rode into them, and about an hour or two later, it was kind of over. They chased them down the side of the mountain, and there was only 200 of them, and they were wildly outnumbered.
There was there was an article the other day that would enable you to find out in the States which tribe was indigenous to your area. And in LA it's three tribes, chiefly the Tongva, and the first wine vineyards. California is so known for its wine. The first vineyards were in LA.
That interesting?
Yeah, I had no idea. And it was a French man had brought over some vines, and his last name was Vines. And because of
Are you lying about that?
No. His last name was Veen.
Was this thousands of years ago, Jennifer, during the ancient Roman ancient. Days?
It
Persian?
It was Soup's agent. He decided to... It was downtown L.A., and I think that there are still some near Olivera Street and remnants of this. And because it was the gold rush, the European Americans of LA decided, oh, we could use the indigenous peoples as our labor.
Yeah.
And they had been so displaced by the mission system, the Spanish mission system, which the Mexican California had freed. So they had gone through the Spanish mission system.
Right.
Then they were freed by the Mexican government. But then they didn't have their history, their land, their culture, and they were ripe for to be indentured servants to the wine industry in L.A.
Just to have a gig.
Yes, yes.
Well, it's astonishing because there's so many tribes down here, and they're so complex.
Well, exactly. And the thing that is just phenomenal is that there are still...
Large populations.
Yes. That they persist, that they manage to make it through all this is just phenomenal. I've worked with indigenous peoples. I've gotten to school with them. And deadpan humor does not even begin.
No, but what's awesome
remember
is...
Remember George?
Yeah.
He was hilarious.
That you worked with at Macy's. There's more... States signing on to Indigenous Peoples Day and letting Columbus Day go. And
I
noticed
never thought I'd see that.
A couple southern states, notably, as we were just talking about earlier before the show, North Carolina has 120,000 Indigenous people, and this the most outside of anybody east of the Mississippi, which is interesting. North mm-hmm. Carolina, of all places.
And we've talked about how overrepresented they are in rock music. I mean, rock guitar.
Link Ray.
So many.
Jesse Ed Davis.
Robbie Robertson.
Robbie St. Marie. The band.
I think the Cramps have two.
Yeah. James.
I mean, there's.
What's his name? Gregory?
Brian Gregory.
Brian Gregory and
Kid Congo and Kid Powers. Congo, yeah. I mean, there's so many guitarists who have indigenous people background. It's fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
Their contribution to rock is
immense.
Phenomenal.
Well,
yeah.
I think inventing the genre might be but there's a bunch of states that have disabused or stopped observing Columbus Day, and a bunch of states in the South, I noticed several, that do both because right. they're trying to straddle the line.
Well, I wonder in San Francisco, because there used to be that lunatic
he would
pretend to be... Christopher
he would
Columbus.
Dress up in a hat.
Well, but you know,
in the whole,
San Francisco,
yeah.
one part of it is bisected by Columbus Avenue.
Yeah, the biggest
and
street.
And it's all Italian restaurants
yeah,
yeah. and cafes
yes.
And,
yes.
and
coffee and ravioli.
Bars
and,
that are a little sketchy because yeah. you've never seen anyone go in and out.
Right.
And it's just a
and pastry
front
shops,
for
or
gangsters.
Used to be pastry shops. And a couple of Italian delis.
And he would pretend to land
mm-hmm.
at Aquatic Park.
At Aquatic Park. Which is a little inlet that's in a semicircle like a Roman harbor.
Yeah.
Speaking of Rome,
so,
ancient Rome.
So Columbus somehow landed on the West Coast and he ordered a crab Louis.
Right, in a tiny boat, and he'd immediately order an Irish coffee and
a crab Louis.
And the two most San Francisco things you could. A white wine and some green goddess.
No, it was really ridiculous. I remember the first time I saw it, I thought like
he used to do it every year and it was on the cover of the Chronicle.
Yeah.
Herb Cain would go. I mean, it was like a thing. And they'd show it on telly, and he wore a colorful Columbus outfit, you know, like your landing clothes, you know, the little tasseled hat and whatnot. And he was an Italian guy with a great big nose and a big mustache. He was handsome and kind of over the top. And he would pretend to discover the America by walking on Aquatic Park Beach with the flag and planting it. And it was just... Smashing. It's so colonialist, Jeff.
Yeah, nothing makes sense. I mean, Sir Francis Drake did crash land
in Marin,
north of San Francisco,
yeah.
and the natives were
Sir
really
Francis Drake
lovely to him. Yeah, exactly.
They gave him fish.
The road named Remember? After him.
They gave him fish and helped them live.
They were like, you idiot, what are you doing?
You realize the extent of his journey at that point. He'd gone around the Horn and around South America, come all the way up, and was lost. It
yes.
got past San Francisco and went to
Which
Marin.
Which makes me think, and this has nothing to do with anything, but it's so West Coast, during Prohibition, nothing was more important than keeping the wine industry going in California.
Yes.
That despite the fact that you could crash in any number of inlets, and there's little islands off of California, the Farallones.
Oh, it's treacherous. Yeah.
So bootleggers would actually risk their lives.
By the way, the Farallones aren't close. They're 25 miles from San Francisco.
And it's just awful, choppy water.
Rough sea.
And so all of those little islands were used to hide alcohol, because nothing is more important to America than drugs, alcohol, guns.
Right. The great gangster mayor of San Francisco from the 60s and early 70s, Joe Alioto. I remember seeing him on TV, and he was quite, you know, he had a lot of flair. He was on Life magazine and all that. He was loud, like Willie Brown. He had that kind of, I dress well, I've got a lot to say. And not as canny as Willie Brown, but certainly a gangster. And I remember he said on TV, they were celebrating something, maybe the repeal of the 19th Amendment or whatever. And he goes, in San Francisco during the 20s, during Prohibition, people kept the faith. There was an exemption in the amendment that said you could have alcohol if it was for religious or medical purposes. And you have never in your life outside of North Beach during the Prohibition met as many sick religious people in your life. I don't think the wine production stopped. If anything, it got more.
It expanded.
Because like all drug prohibition, it gave the foothold to crime to transport
to
it.
To flourish.
Yeah. Florida and California, I think, really, and Canada. Anybody along the border with Canada, Detroit, all those places, Rochester, like, were made.
Yeah.
Buffalo was made then, because the booze flow was delicious.
I just want to know who was canoeing out to
in LA
the
too.
Farallones. Remember,
they did it on these islands here. The Farallones are scary.
Yes.
They're so far away, and they're not. I mean, they're beautiful. I love that we call them the Farallones too. They're not close to the city. Who's live anyways on the road with R. Ryan Stiles? And this weekend is a real big one. I hope it comes out before we get there. On Friday, we'll be in Newark, Delaware.
What?
Why is there in Newark, Delaware? That's October 18th. Saturday, we'll be in Emmons Auditorium in Muncie, Indiana, which, no, the Six Bunny one, he did not have a layover.
I want to believe that that's true.
Muncie was funnier. In my opinion.
Right?
Muncie was funnier. I've been to so many places in Indiana. Fort Wayne. Wow. Anyway, we'll be in Newark, Delaware on Friday the 18th. We'll be in Muncie, Indiana on Saturday the 19th. And dig this. It's not just me and Joelle Murray and Geoffrey DeVee and Rion Stiles. It's also Dave Foley from the Kids in the Hall and television funny man Drew Carey.
Wow.
It's a six-hander with more cisgendered, dysfunctional white guys than you could possibly shake a stick at. Oh.
And pretty male.
I want you to look at all of the last names except mine, Jennifer. Davis, Murray.
You're holding down the ethnic
Davis,
quarter.
Murray, Stiles, Foley, Carey, Proops.
Huh.
So they're all Scottish-Irish. And it's really nice. They're lovely guys. And we're going to be there Friday and Saturday.
I'm jealous that you're going to Birmingham.
Well, I was just going to talk about that.
Yeah, please.
The weekend after that, David Foley joins the group, and Ryan Stiles goes back up to the misty climbs of the Pacific Northwest, where he hides like an enormous Sasquatch in his cave, biding his time until all of the comedy juices are ripe for him to flow again in December, when he's going to unleash on the world once more. Until then, David Foley's joining us for a good deal of November. But dig these dates. I think you're going to freak out. Aside from the Muncie and Newark dates, which Dave was simply just informed of that he was going to do, and it came as quite a surprise to him, we're going to be in Birmingham, Alabama, Greensboro, North Carolina, and Huntsville. Tell us more. All right.
Oh, Birmingham has that great restaurant. And
what's
that's
it called?
The Highlands. And that's
Highlands
we've talked
Bar
about
and
her
Grill
before.
Or yeah.
Dole, and I can't remember her last name. She won the pastry chef.
Right, the
award
James
from
Beard.
The James Beard Foundation, that she's the greatest pastry chef in America.
And we were looking at the menu today, and the pastry menu is really like four or five dishes. It was real intensive.
Yeah.
One was an apple tart, was
coconut
it?
Coconut cake.
Here's what I'm trying to do. I'm going to try to go there. It's only open for dinner, or maybe get them to order dinner from there. If they can't, then maybe get some dessert or something later. I've got to try to get by. October 24th with the Carolina Theater in Greensboro, North Carolina. October 25th with the Lyric in Birmingham. Really excited about going to North Carolina and Alabama. We love seeing our friends in the South.
And Montgomery just elected their first, in their entire history, their first African-American mayor, which I cannot believe.
Mr. Reed was elected, and he's, as you say, the first one. What they call Montgomery a lot of times is the cradle of the Confederacy.
Yeah, they do.
So
the city hall there used to have a portrait of Jefferson Davis.
It does not now?
I hope it doesn't.
A portrait of Jefferson Davis.
Yeah.
Jefferson Davis is such a astonishing figure in American history. Anyway, we'll be in Huntsville on October 26th on Saturday at the Wernher von Braun Center for the Performing Arts. Then we're going to be in Arizona. We'll come back to the Montgomery mayor. Also, the mayor of Talladega was elected an African American, and Talladega, as you know,
and Birmingham has an African American mayor,
and Jackson, Randall Mississippi, Woodfin. And New Orleans, and.
But it's, Alabama.
It's pretty awesome.
That's wild.
The heart of the Confederacy. Let's be real clear.
Alabama doesn't have a majority African-American population.
Not like Mississippi.
So this is huge.
It is. And it's magnificent. I think it's bonus good news in the last few weeks.
Yeah, it is. There's a runoff in Louisiana. We want everyone in Louisiana to go out and vote next month for the Democrat as governor, John Bell Edwards.
Bell Edwards. Yes, I would say so. And 45's been trying to stump furiously against him there, but I don't know that that's a winning cause. Bell Edwards did quite well last time. He's a bit conservative for a Democrat, but he represents his...
Very conservative, but it's Louisiana, and he's the only Democrat governor in the South, the Deep South.
Yep.
The only.
There's Brian in Mississippi, Ivy in Alabama.
He has a terrible
DeSantis in Florida.
Record on reproductive rights, but he has a good record for...
He doesn't hate criminals. He's been very good about criminal reform.
And they have the worst prison.
Yeah.
So
Louisiana?
Yeah.
They have chain gangs.
Angola.
Yeah. Unbelievable. Moving from the dire to the hilariously shallow... we'll be back on the road on November 7th in Flagstaff, Arizona, which I'm quite looking forward to, at the Orpheum Theater. What a historic place. Flagstaff's so weird. It's up in the mountains in Arizona. It's not hot. There's a university up there, and it's all piney
it's
and whatnot.
It's quite pretty.
Yeah, it's a really picturesque. And also, famously, on Route 66, when you had to, in the old days, take that California trip as you were urged by Bobby Troop. You went from Chicago, but then there was that weird...
Did you get your kicks?
Totally. You swung through Oklahoma City. Sure looks pretty. But then you caught the top corner of Arizona on the way to L.A., which is a really weird route. Now, of course, you would go like I-10 through the center of everything, through center of New Mexico, center of Arizona, Phoenix, Phoenix to Yuma, Yuma to San Diego, you know, or L.A., swing up. But yeah, it's Route 66, this... sexy and circuitous, I think, is kind of
why. And I'm guessing, like, you know, little independent restaurants along the way. And...
They play that so hard. They play it. Well, it's like you and I, what we long to when we grew up. You were always telling me about places your father took you and I tell you
we
about.
We would go way out of the way to get to that.
So you didn't have to go to a Denny's or Howard Jones.
Yeah. We would go to avoid any kind of chain or corporate thing.
Right.
To go to the one off. Remember when we went to the one in Oregon?
Bev and Ev's Steakhouse, Steak and Chicken.
Was so cute.
Was it called Chicken and Steak or Steak and Chicken? Something like that.
Yeah. Chicken and Steak.
It can't be there anymore.
No, it isn't. And then there was the one in, what about the lesbian couple that ran the place in Willits?
Oh, that was really cute.
You know, those places, you have to, you know, make an effort.
The last time we went there, I remember we said, what's up? And she said, pot roast. And you went, I'll have the pot roast. And I went, I'll have the pot roast. And she went, there's only one order and she's getting it.
Yeah, exactly. not for the man. You don't get any.
Yeah, that was in, was it Willits or Ukiah? It was up there in Northern California. Fantastic. No, Bev and Ev's chicken place was really good. Was that Roseburg?
And I love, Oregon? I don't remember, but there were gingham curtains, and the waiters were older.
At Bev and Ev's?
And had all the personality.
And there was three things on the menu.
And I love that.
There wasn't anything on the menu.
Yeah, and...
You could either have fried chicken
or steak. So you knew that they weren't faking.
No.
It was going to be great fried chicken.
And was it apple pie for dessert or something? There was a real, or peach cobbler kind of thing. It was one or two, like.
Well, Oregon, I'm guessing berries.
Yeah, right. It might have been a berry pie.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Oregon. Now you're making me want berries. We'll be at the Orpheum Theater in Flagstaff. And then Pikes Peak Center in Colorado Springs. You might have been to Colorado Springs, eh?
I have. Yes.
November 8th. November 9th will be in... I can't even believe this one. November 9th, Saturday, we're going to be at the Performing Arts Center of Rapid City, South Dakota. If you've ever seen the movie North by Northwest, and I just watched West Side Story, which Ernest Lehman wrote, and Ernest Lehman wrote North by Northwest. Ernest Lehman was called in to write screenplays for a zillion great directors and great films because he's dead bloody clever.
Well, yeah, North by Northwest is one of the great.
Aren't I lucky that they set me next to you? That was Cary Grant, by the way. I'll explain who I'm doing so that there's a lot of cuts down on the chit chat in the podcast audience.
Eva Marie Saint is so great in that part.
I slipped the waiter $10 so that he'd put you at my table. She really puts her heart and soul into her work. I can tell you that.
Who was that?
That was supposed to be Cary Grant. Here's one that I think you'll find more recognizable. James Mason, I'll identify it before I do it. Leonard, how does one say goodbye to one's right arm? That movie's really good. Anyway, Ernest Lehman wrote it. And the joke of North by Northwest is for a good deal of the movie, he's sent to Rapid City, South Dakota. He's forced to stay at a hotel there. He's given a message that takes him outside of Rapid City, South Dakota, where he takes a bus to a weird country designation. At that designation, he's surrounded by cornfields and is attacked by a biplane that's crop dusting the cornfields. Yes. The plane crop dusts once and then turns on him and tries to shoot him with its machine guns. And it's one of the most famous Hitchcock sequences, and that's all Rapid City. So we were looking at the itinerary, which got changed, by the way. We weren't always in Rapid City. And I went, Rapid City, why is that funny to me? And then, oh no, even the hospital scene where he goes through the hospital room and he goes... And the good-looking girl puts her glasses on and goes, stop, stop. And he goes, that's Rapid City too. Like, it's all, I think Ernest Lehman thought it was so goddamn funny. Oh, by the way, Mount Rushmore is the conclusion of that movie, the climax, if you will, of North by Northwest takes place. And how close is that to Rapid City?
I have no idea.
Should we go?
No.
No.
No. Why? No. No.
Years ago.
If we go, we're not going to go to Mount Rushmore.
We're going to go to Sioux places.
Yes.
Isn't there a crazy horse statue there too in South Dakota?
There
is.
Yeah.
I would much rather see
complicated.
I think you just go where the crazy horse one is. Then, and this is a very special.
I think you go neither and you see some genuine sights.
Well, this is a special shout out. To some people that I think get skipped over a lot here in the lower 48. On November 15th and 16th, yes, that's right, on November 15th and 16th, with David Foley, we're visiting Fairbanks and Anchorage, Alaska.
Whoa.
You're going to love the place we're playing in Fairbanks. November 15th, the Friday, the Herring Auditorium.
Herring?
No, it's not spelled that way. It might be hearing. But I think it's Herring. And then we're going to be at the Margaret Atwood Concert Hall in Anchorage on November 16th. And then Memphis, Wichita, Des Moines on the 16th, 21st, 22nd, and 23rd. We're going to be at the Hoyt Sherman Place. And then in December, they go on without me. I will be in, awesomely, England with Jennifer. We're going to go do Nightmare Before Christmas. The 2nd, we're going to be in Glasgow. At the Hydro Center. The 4th and the 5th will be at Wembley Arena.
An intimate arrangement.
Oh, you can smell us. Then we'll be in Dublin on the 8th. And this is with John McCherry at the Baton. Danny Elfman, will be singing his role of Jack Skellington. This is the Nightmare Before Christmas live to film with a full symphony orchestra. Catherine O'Hara will be reprising her role as Sally. And Ken Page will be doing Oogie Boogie.
Oh, he's wonderful.
Yeah, it's just a smashing show, and it's good entertainment all around. I thank you, and I beg your beneficent indulgence. Oh, we'll also be in San Francisco for New Year's and all that. The whole week. I think we start the 27th and carry on through the 31st. So we're going to do the podcast, I think, on the 27th. And then we'll be there the whole weekend doing stand-up. And no, I haven't fixed the album that we recorded in August yet there. Thank you for asking, though. I appreciate that. Also, thank you for all the birthday wishes. That was really sweet of you. I had my 44th birthday, a week ago, a couple weeks ago. And I really appreciate all the wishes I got on the online Twitter machine and the fanmailforgreg@gmail.com, fanmailforgreg@gmail.com. It was very sweet of you, and it moves me to the very core of my being. Nothing, I don't think, has connected us, Jennifer and me, to you guys more than the podcast over the last 10 years, and it's been a pretty groovy experience. I'm going to talk about a couple things here, and then I'm going to let you speak again, Jennifer. Danica Rame and Andrea Jenkins came to the shows on the weekend. Oh, we were so in cool. Bethesda, Maryland, and Danica Rame, who is in the running for re-election in 3 weeks' time in the 13th district of the Virginia House of Delegates, which she stood for a couple of years now, and she's famously the first trans woman to be elected to the Virginia in any capacity.
And she ran against a homophobe.
Well, and the woman she's running against this time, whose name shall go not mentioned, even though I've been to her website and studied up on her, she has the same Republican talking points that they all do. She wants a kick-ass war, and she somehow, unborn babies are more important than traffic and day-to-day issues. In any case, we saw Danica. And it's kind of funny, Jennifer. She, as you recall, I said something on her Twitter timeline. Yeah. I said something like lovely about something that happened to her. And she wrote back, "You wore a Nine Inch Nails t-shirt." Thank you.
That t-shirt when I went to Lollapalooza.
Right. And who was on the bill that year?
It was, Jane's Addiction.
Right.
Had reformed and they were headlining and it was.
Wasn't it his gig then?
It was, yeah, of course. Yeah. And it was a great lineup. Iced Tea.
With and, Body Count, was it?
And Susie Sue.
Wow.
And the Banshees.
This is daytime, right?
No.
Daytime and nighttime.
Yeah. Nine Inch Nails.
Really?
And they, you know, to be honest, not their best.
Who?
Showing Nine Inch Nails.
Great t-shirt though.
The hilarious thing was seeing, you know, goths. It's hard for goths in the daytime.
Oh my God. It's impossible for goths in the daytime.
And I remember kind of being a little bit, I just thought it was hilarious. There was a tent giving out, SPF sun cream, and I just thought, really?
But that was the beginning of that, Jennifer. You went, that was like 1989, 1990. You were 10 or 11 years old. You barely remember it. But as I recall, they gave out water and they gave out earplugs and they had sun cream. Like it was the first acknowledging in that era that these are harmful things, though. The things that we did in high school. Where we just exposed ourselves to the sun and 125 decibels.
I never exposed myself to
I
the
did.
Sun.
I did.
I hid.
I went to Days on the Green with my friend Skip and whatnot, and we would get shit-faced from the beginning of the day to the end and lay in the sun, and I wouldn't enjoy anything. You wake up about 5 in the afternoon, right?
No. Yeah, awful.
A biker woman dropped her acid on me. I remember that.
What?
And she went like this. She licked her finger and put her hand on my jeans and pulled it off.
Whoa. At Lollapalooza that time, the best thing, of course, was that Perry Farrell was fighting with Dave Navarro on stage during their show.
And they closed, right?
And yeah.
It was obviously their gig.
And yeah. And then the guitarist for Nine Inch Nails threw his guitar into the air and it hit him in the head.
Like Martin and Lewis. Boom. Yeah, that's being cool. You know, I won't dismiss Nine Inch Nails because I love the T-shirt.
The T-shirt's fantastic.
And
no, I saw that T-shirt and I was like, yes.
You bought it for me and it was deep black. It had a rectangle that said N-I-N, but the second N was inverted. So the N's faced one another.
And Danica was in a metal band.
Danica asked me what kind of music I liked the minute I met her. And that's I had to say I like funk and disco and new wave. Right. You know, like I had to jazz.
Yeah.
I'm never going to diminish Nine Inch Nails.
We did talk a lot about Lemmy today.
Yeah,
with a friend.
No question. And I've reassessed Lemmy's music, and I feel like it's amazingly good. I bought a coat in Cleveland in 1990 when I played there, and the downtown mall had this resurgence.
Oh my God, I remember that coat.
There was a Barney's and whatnot, and the coat was cream colored with black sleeves and had two giant silver buttons on it. I wore that on Whose Line with the Nine Inch Nails T-shirt that you gave me,
yeah,
to great acclaim, by the way. And I don't say that out of hand. I mean, no one gave me a prize or a gold, like the Golden Yak, Turkey's Fourth Highest Honor in Film Achievement.
But how nice that she remembered that.
A lot of people remember the Nine Inch Nails T-shirt and the cow vest, so both of which were your.
Yeah, they were. But that was when London had some really groovy markets where you could talk to somebody that had made one-offs.
Yeah.
And
I still love my Dolly Daydream ring.
Yeah, there were some trippy
Dolly
things.
Dolly Daydream.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Skull rings and that shirt that I got you that had the writing on it.
Right. That said "Kick and Suck Us Out."
Yeah.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. I wore a shirt. You couldn't see it. By the way, the writing was oblique and kind of in cursive.
I think I bought that at the Kensington Hypermarket.
I wore it to Texas to a gig, and I remember a lot of the staff at the club in Dallas was pretty excited about it. And that Tony Kameen, as you recall, a San Francisco legendary comedian, call it a hunch. Tony Kameen said, does that say "Kick and Suck Us Out" on the back? And I was like, it does.
Yeah.
We have a lot to answer for, Jennifer. And I don't care. Danica Rame is awesome. She's courageous and a really, really astute person.
After the show, she was back out. She was talking to her constituents the very next morning after seeing your show.
She's a dedicated public servant.
Yeah, she is.
What I would say about her more than anything else is she's along the lines of Katie Porter or...
Katie Hill.
Or Katie Hill or Ani Moxine or Nancy. In that, what does Michael Caine say in Get Carter? You're a big man, but you let yourself go. With me, it's a full-time job. I think
really,
it's a full-time job.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
She's not fucking about in any way. Danica Rame. We talked about her opponent. I said that I'd been on the website, and she was like, "Oh, I'm sorry for you." And I was like, "I know, it's a lot of, you know, talking points and not much there. Her with her family, her with baby, you know, like the whole thing." And her election's in 3.5 weeks, and she made time from her schedule to come see us, which was really nice. And then the next night, we went to see Andrea Jenkins, who's the first African-American trans woman to be elected in the state of Minnesota. She's on the vice president of the Minneapolis city council.
I believe she's the first openly transgender African-American woman to be elected
in America,
public office in America.
Well, and then certainly Minneapolis.
Thank you very much. And she's also a stellar poet.
Well, her Twitter handle is Anna Poetic, and you may remember that we had her on the ACLU podcast that we did last year from the national conference, because Jennifer was hip enough to get her and Johnny to, they were both poets.
Oh my God. And they were so lovely.
Yeah. And Andrea Jenkins was awesome and came to the show with her family. Danica came with her family as well. Well, we were just thrilled beyond measure to have these heroes in our presence and be able to invite them to the show and hang out with them after. And they're both so cool. And they require your support, ladies and gentlemen. Andrea Jenkins is, as I say, the vice president of the city council of Minneapolis. Jacob Frey is the mayor of Minneapolis. And 45 had a horrible racist rally there where he really hacked into Somalis, which was aimed at Ilhan Omar, whose the district is Minneapolis. And he stuck them with a $50,000 bill, which he does with everyone. And
what did Andrea say to you, though, about
he never pays Ilhan? For anything. He no, doesn't pay.
No,
his...
about Ilhan Omar.
Oh, that...
That she's golden.
She's golden.
And that isn't that beautiful that the city of Minneapolis responds to that hatred with respect for their representative?
Mm. No question. And Mayor Frey tweeted, "We accept everybody here with, you know," I believe he responded to one of 45's tweets with yawn, which really made me happy. He just went yawn.
That's great.
Minneapolis is a kind of groovy in that regard.
Shouldn't
I really
they name their airport there after Prince?
Jennifer, it's the Lindbergh Airport. I mean, no. If we had to, no. It's the worst. Yeah. Jennifer, it's like calling it the Heinrich Himmler Airport of the gods or whatever, the Joseph Goebbels. It's just, Lindbergh is the most awful figure in American history. He's from there.
They could rename pretty much everything after Prince.
He's a famous aviator. He's a famous, oh God. If it was the Morris Day Airport of the performing arts, I would.
Is Morris Day from Minneapolis too?
I don't care. He played in Minneapolis. Jesse Johnson. Jesse. Oh, now, Jerome. Yeah. Yes.
Jerome.
Dun, 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 dun. Yeah. No, Minneapolis has a lot of great things.
The Wendy and Lisa Terminal.
Diamonds and Pearls. The Wendy and Lisa. If it was the Wendy and Lisa Terminal, I would like it better than Charles Lindbergh.
No, no.
Boo.
Do you want me to cover Beverly Guitar Watkins?
Yeah, let's do all the edits and let's get the fuck out of here.
Wow. That was charming.
Wasn't it?
The Atlanta Journal has a lovely obituary for Beverly Guitar Watkins written by Suzanne Van Atten. And this is from the beginning of this month when she passed away at 80. She performed with James Brown, Ray Charles, Otis Redding, and whose blistering licks on a 1962 Red Fender Mustang earned her the well-deserved nickname Guitar. Playing a classic style she called low-down blues, Watkins' career spanned 6 decades, during which time she played stages around the world and earned a W.C. Handy Blues Award nomination for her debut solo album recorded when she was 60.
Oh, my God.
She was totally unsung and unheralded and had a worldwide influence, said Tim Duffy, the founder of North Carolina's Music Maker Relief Foundation, which supports traditional musicians and music. And you can go on their website and donate. She played on seminal rock and blues records that influenced the likes of John Lennon. Born at Atlanta's Grady Hospital, Watkins was 3 months old when her mother died. Her sharecropping grandparents took her in. Watkins' life was steeped in music from the beginning, starting with gospel. What I loved in this story was there was a preacher that would come to her house to sell coal, and he had an electric guitar.
Really?
And he would set it up. And what I love, like the idea of that you would be a preacher
who
selling
sold
coal,
coal,
and that you would also have your guitar
right,
with
right, he had chops.
And so she was entranced by that. And it was his guitar that she played as a teenager.
A red Strat, is it?
No, that was her later. His name was Reverend White. He would deliver coal to the house, and he would also set up an electric guitar and play, which got her interest. The first time she performed with an electric guitar was in the talent show when she was 17. He let me borrow his amp and guitar, and I did Blue Suede Shoes.
Well, it's one for the
Isn't
money.
Isn't that cute, though? And then, this is wild, by a stroke of luck, she was forced to go to a different high school. And the high school she ended up at had a band teacher named Clark Terry.
Clark Terry?
Yes. The Clark Terry from Count Basie and Duke Ellington fame. And so she joined a doo-wop band. Yes, so somehow Clark Terry, who is also a mentor for Quincy Jones and Miles Davis, happened to help her and got her in contact with Piano Red and joined his band. And somehow,
well done, Piano Red.
So she had this career where she was so influential. There's a lovely, on Dust to Digital, ran a snippet of her in a library doing...
just pyrotechnics.
Performing for a group of women.
Yeah.
And apparently the reaction of a young girl seeing mm-hmm. her play a guitar like that, she would play it behind her head, behind her back.
Like Hendrix.
And...
Or more like her.
Yeah, more like her. Because she couldn't make a living in the band, she washed cars, cleaned houses and offices to play mm-hmm. the bills. She even played in the underground in Atlanta. Sometimes she said she made $30 a day. But after the age of 60, she performed around the world. Which
isn't
is pretty
that
wild.
Great? Yeah. Oh my God, it's so fantastic that Beverly Guitar Watkins was able to. Whoa. Where are the other 100 women that played the blues?
That invented rock and blues.
Right?
Yeah. Here's the quote. When Beverly performed, she moved people, but especially young women and girls. Guitar playing is seen as a macho kind of thing, so when a woman gets up there and plays like amazing, she rocked harder than a man. And that was inspiring.
Very much so. Beverly Guitar Watkins. Do we want to go into a Diane Carroll and...
Diane Carroll and Jesse Norman.
Diane Carroll, the elegant singer, actress, Tony Award winner, activist, and incandescently astonishing star of stage, screen, and the telly. I was a young child. Jennifer was,
really?
Yeah. And she had a sitcom called Julia. In any case, this is the corniest thing I could possibly think of.
She didn't just have a sitcom. She was the first African-American woman to be the star of a sitcom. And she was playing a middle-class woman, a nurse with a kid. Her husband had died in Vietnam.
Yep.
And it was groundbreaking.
Nothing about Diane Carroll is unimpressive. She's one of the most elegant, self-possessed, tremendously eloquent performers of the... when Nancy Wilson passed, I felt the same.
People that helped other performers.
Very much so. Diane Carroll had such a gigantic film and television career.
And she was a first in a lot of categories.
And said openly, I've had two parts offered to me in the last 4 years, if you think it's equal. Like, I was the lead in a movie, I was the lead in a TV show, and I don't get, you know.
What?
She's awesome. She wasn't being offered roles. Because she was African-American. However, I want to tee this up, and it's Perry Como. Perry Como, for the kids who are listening, was a... How do you describe Perry Como? Kind of a like the Italian Bing Crosby, like this really laid-back,
Imagine anodyne. A human Valium with a sweater.
What was SCTV's? He made me want to stand up and stretch. Perry Como was a crooner. And here's a couple of his songs. Magic Moments, which was written by Backrack David. And he went, the places we went, the things that we ate, the things that we touched. It was really weird. Anyway, Perry Como introduces Diane Carroll here. And you have to understand that this is why this show's the way it is. The 70s are inexplicable. Perry Como reading a postcard from Diane Carroll. Here we go.
Dear Perry, Paris is unbelievable. I keep meeting the most fascinating people. Love, Diane.
Looked on as something shocking. Now heaven knows anything goes. Good author.
Diane Carroll, Richard Rodgers wrote her a musical. He tried to get her into Flower Drum Song, but they weren't able to fudge it enough to make her an Asian character.
She was in Porgy and Bess, wasn't she?
Yes. And he wrote her a musical, and she won the Tony for that musical. Mm-hmm. And it was about an interracial romance and whatnot. And then, of course, she went from there to Julia, the sitcom that we're talking about, that had characters named fantastically. Corey was her son.
Uh-huh.
But so Corey's best friend was named Earl J. Wagadorn.
This is the quote that just killed me, because later, she was in Dynasty.
Yeah, she was.
And so this is the obituary from the Hollywood Reporter.
Fantastic.
And while recuperating after starring on Broadway in Agnes of God, which, did you know she did that?
No, I did not know she did.
Carol had found herself digging Dynasty. Isn't this the biggest hoot, she said, and lobbied the producer for a role in the series. They've done everything on the show, she said. They've done incest, homosexuality, murder. I think they're slowly inching their way toward interracial. I want to be wealthy and ruthless. I want to be the first black bitch on television.
But she was.
No, but that's the quote.
Greg. I know. It's so great.
Greg.
She was, though. She was. She did that. She made that happen.
As the sultry fashionista Dominique Devereaux,
prominently
featured African American character on a primetime soap opera.
Yes. And she's a horrible.
And I love that she really wanted to do that. That's so cute that she was like, I want to be a horrible, ruthless monster. And
but why aren't black women allowed to be powerful?
But she was the first in so many categories. Mm,
the Tony.
And on top of that, she was kind and considerate to other performers and gave them a helping hand.
And worked with everybody. All of her leading men were so... Yeah, no, she was an astonishing individual.
She understood, you know, and was really mindful of her position and what she could do with that.
No question. Diane Carroll's a titanic figure in American show business. Are we going to do the sports, or are we just going to...
Let's...
Jesse Norman and...
Yeah. You mean talk about Allison Felix and the phenomenal Simone Biles?
Well, we could, but let's do that Monday.
All right.
Let's talk about Jesse Norman and how the world shifted because of her. She's such a...
Well, her voice is so...
Irreplaceable.
Beautiful. The idea that someone like her managed to get into the realm of opera and be a star is a testament to her power, her willpower, and her unbelievable talent, her gorgeous voice. She was 6'1".
Yeah. She's Titanic.
This was from Billboard. Her funeral was just recently.
In Augusta.
Yeah.
Georgia.
Georgetown University sociologist and author Michael Eric Dyson proudly said, Jesse Norman was black girl magic before the term ever existed. Before there was Oprah, before there was Beyonce, before there was Michelle Obama, there was Jesse Norman. When she arrived, when she made an entrance, we knew that God had blessed us with a majestic diva. When she spoke, it was tremendous. She spoke unafraid and unapologetic about being black in America, yet she attained the summit and the heights of ecstatic proclamation as one of the world's greatest singers, and she never forgot where she came from.
She was one of the world's greatest singers.
Mm-hmm.
In our lifetime, we're so lucky that we were alive.
Well, when you Jesse said Norman, when you started, when I sent you the piece of her singing La Marseillaise, and then you went down the rabbit hole. You can't stop listening to her voice. It's so clear and gorgeous.
1989, the French government asked Jesse Norman to sing their 200th anniversary.
Wearing Azadine Alaya.
She's 6'1" and stomping around in the French flag. It's great. Yeah, it's great. She's not French. She's from the South. It's just amazing. Jesse Norman did everything in her career.
Well, and also someone like Diane Carroll, who helped those that came after her. As Lawrence Fishburne said at her funeral, she always was there at his shows backstage when he was doing plays in New York.
Right.
That she would come and she would always be there for him. She was that person, and she was a mentor to so many people.
Jesse Norman, Diane Carroll, and Beverly Guitar Watkins are inexpressibly amazing throughout the entirety of the universe. Nothing can ever replace or define how awesome they all are in their dignity, pride, and excellence. You've been the smartest crowd in the world. I've been the smartest man in the world. May every page that you turn be a satchel page. May every bell that rings for you be a cool pub bell. And if you have to buy bonds, make sure they're...
Oh.
Jesse Norman.